This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Lawn Boy by Gary Paulson, performed by Tom Parks. With all gratitude to Britton Walker.
Forward. I don't have a clue how all this will end. There are people now who say I'm some kind of wonder boy or that I know some secret and that I have this big hairy plan. Nope. One minute I was 12 years old and wondering where I could get enough money for an inner tube for my old used 10-speed. I didn't have any money, and my parents didn't have much either. My mom's a teacher in an experimental school, and my dad's an inventor. Sometimes it takes a long time to work out a new idea. This was one of those times, so we were a little bit broke. Mom and I have learned not to ask too many questions about what he's doing, because if we do, he wants to use us as guinea pigs, and we learned our lesson during what we now refer to as the voice-activated door incident. Dad swears Mom's nose is as cute as ever, and I don't notice anything different about it, but she still touches it gingerly when he starts talking about some big new idea he's got going. The next minute, it seems, I've got a business of my own with employees, and I'm rich. I'd better explain. It all began at 9 a.m. on my 12th birthday when my grandmother gave me an old riding lawnmower. Chapter 1. The Principles of Economic Expansion. My grandmother is the kind of person who always thinks that no matter how bad things might seem, everything will always come out all right. Her hair could be on fire and she'd probably say, "Well, at least we have light to read by." She's the most positive person in the world and amazing and fun to be around, but in a strange and happy way, sometimes she seems to be about 9 bricks shy of a full load. You can say, "You know, I think the Yankees will win the World Series again." And she'll answer, "Yes, but it's nice to put carrots in stew for the flavor." And you think that somewhere inside that brain, maybe a screw came loose. Then you find out that the last time the Yankees won the World Series, she made a stew and forgot to put carrots in and blamed the Yankees, she never liked them anyway, when the stew tasted funny. She still doesn't like the Yankees. "It all makes sense if you wait long enough," she says. So when I turned 12, she came to the house with an old riding mower in the back of her Toyota pickup. "Happy birthday," she said. "It used to belong to your grandfather. He was always working on it. I thought you might like it." A mower? Though we lived on the edge of what was termed an upper-middle-class neighborhood, Eden Prairie, Minnesota, our house was small. A fixer-upper when my folks bought it 4 years ago. It had a yard the size of a postage stamp, and the grass never seemed to grow enough to need mowing. It just sprouted, stopped, gave up, and died. Over and over. My father and I lifted the mower down from the truck bed. "A lawn mower?" I looked at Grandma. "Thanks." "My bridge club's meeting on Thursday night," she said, getting back into her truck, "which makes it hard to watch CSI since it's on Thursday, too. Did you know that?" And she drove away before I could answer her, much less wait for the part where it made sense.
"It appears you now have a lawn mower,"
my father said, smiling, as he walked back into the house. "I don't know the connection with her bridge club either, although I'm sure there is one.
She's your mom's mother. Maybe your mom will know what that meant."
I looked at the mower. Very old, low, small. It looked like it only cut about a 2-foot-wide area, and it was nothing like the fancy new machines. The seat was steel, without a pad, and the driver's feet went over the top of the motor to rest on 2 foot pedals. One was a brake, the other a clutch that you had to push down to get the mower moving. It steered with 2 levers, like a very small bulldozer, and looked more like a toy than a mower. Okay, since I was 12, I didn't have much experience with motors. I've never even had a dirt bike or four-wheeler. I'm just not machine-oriented. My birthday present sat there. I tried pushing it toward our garage, but it didn't seem to want to move. Even turning around to put my back against it and push with my legs, which I thought might give me better leverage, didn't help. It still sat there. So I studied it. On the left side of the motor was a small gas tank, and I unscrewed the top and looked in. Yep, gas. On top of the tank were two levers. The first was next to pictures of a rabbit and a turtle. Even though I'm not good with machines, I figured out that was the throttle, and the pictures meant fast and slow. The other lever said on-off. I pushed on. Nothing happened, of course. On the very top of the motor was a starting pull rope. What the heck? Why not? I gave it a jerk, and the motor sputtered a little, popped once, then died. I pulled the rope again, and the motor hesitated, popped, and then roared to life. I jumped back. No muffler. Once, when I was little, my grandmother, in her usual logic-defying fashion, answered my request for another cookie by saying that my grandfather had been a tinkerer. He was always puttering with things, taking them apart, putting them back together. When he was around, nothing ever broke. Nothing ever dared to break. Loud as the mower was, it still wasn't moving, and the blade wasn't going around. I stood looking down at it. This strange thing happened. It spoke to me. Well, not really. I'm not one of those woo-woo people or a whack job. At least I don't think I was. Well, maybe I am now. Anyway, there was some message that came from the mower through the air and into my brain, a kind of warm or maybe a settled feeling, like I was supposed to be there, and so was the mower, the two of us. Like it was a friend. So, all right, I know how that sounds, too. We'll sit under a tree and talk to each other, read poems about mowing, totally whack. But the feeling was there. Next, I found myself sitting on the mower, my feet on the pedals. I moved the throttle to the rabbit position, it had been on turtle, and pushed the left pedal down, and the blade started whirring. The mower seemed to give a happy leap forward off the sidewalk, and I was mowing the lawn. Or dirt. As I said, we didn't really have much of a lawn. Dust and bits of dead grass flew everywhere, and until I figured out the steering, the mailbox, my mother's flowers near the front step, and a small bush were in danger. But in a few minutes, I got control of the thing, and I sheared off what little grass there was. The front lawn didn't take long, but before I was done, the next-door neighbor came to the fence, attracted by the dust cloud. He waved me over. I stopped in front of him, pulled the throttle back, and killed the engine. The sudden silence was almost deafening. I stood up away from the mower, my ears humming so I could hear him.
"You mow lawns?"
he asked.
"How much?"
And that was how it started. Chapter 2, The Growth of Capitalism. When it all began, it was simple. Our neighbor's house had a larger yard than ours with what looked like good grass. No difficult corners, just a big square with a large elm tree in the center. I mowed it, and he gave me money. $20. Figuring that I used almost all the gas in the tank, about a gallon, which cost $3, and not counting the wear and tear on the mower, I didn't know how to figure that out. I made $17 for my work. It took 2 hours, so I made $8.50 an hour. That, I was to learn later, was called capitalism. While I was finishing up that lawn, the next neighbor up the block came by and said, "How much to mow my lawn?" Wow, another job just like that. I poked around in our garage and found an old 3-gallon gas can. I walked to the station on the corner, bought gas, brought it back, filled the tank, and mowed the second guy's yard. And while I was doing that, a third man came and asked me to mow his lawn. The lawns kept getting bigger, and soon it was dinner time, and I had done 3 lawns and had made $60, and I had a small piece of scrap paper with phone numbers and addresses for 6 more lawns. Turns out the man who owned the lawn service that had done all the yards in our neighborhood had run off with the wife of one of his customers, and all the husbands were worried about hiring a new company after what had happened. A kid like me mowing their lawns wouldn't be much of a threat, I suppose. Plus, I was cheap. Later, I would learn that I had tapped into something called an expanding market economy. All I knew was that it felt good to have all that money in my pockets. That evening, I took a rag and wiped the mower down, parked it in a corner of the garage, and a little admission here, patted it on the top of the gas tank. As I bent over it, the wads of bills cracked in my pockets. Thanks, Grandpa. I never really knew my grandfather, but the mower seemed tough and friendly. Maybe it was like him. He had worked on it and used it, and it was nice to think of him as part of it. Then I went inside. A strange thing happened. My parents were getting food on the table, and as we sat down to eat, my dad said,
"That new film about astronomy is on at the IMAX. It would be great to see it."
He sighed, and I knew he was thinking about our budget. And there I sat, my pockets full of money. And I could have said, "No problem, I've got money, and I'll earn more money tomorrow and more money the day after that." But I kept my mouth shut. I could have said all those things, but nothing came. Somehow it didn't feel right for me to be the one offering to take us all to the movies. If I did that, wouldn't Dad feel worse? Wouldn't it sound like I was bragging? I ate my meatloaf and green beans and then went into the living room and watched a little television, or tried to. I still had the sound of the mower in my ears, so I couldn't hear the set, and my whole body was still vibrating from sitting on the mower all day. After a few minutes, I couldn't keep my eyes open. By 8 o'clock, I was sitting on the couch with my head hanging forward, drool dripping onto my T-shirt, sound asleep. Mom shook me awake and sent me up to bed, where I crashed onto the pillow, still dressed, pockets full of bills. End of day one with my lawnmower, and that was the easiest day. Chapter 3. The Law of Increasing Product Demand versus Flat Production Capacity. There was a second then, or a minute, or maybe even a day when things could have remained sort of normal. The next day, I moved the mower farther into the richer part of the neighborhood, where the lawns began to get larger while my mower seemed to get smaller. Of course, it didn't really, but that's how it felt. Soon it became obvious that I could only do 3 or maybe 4 lawns a day if I worked from just before dawn to just after dark. And while it's true that the owners of the larger yards paid me more, I was getting $30 to $40 a lawn the second day. There was also the distance factor. I had to ride the mower from lawn to lawn, and as I moved farther from our house, that meant it would take me longer to get home at night, putt-putting down the edge of the street on the mower. Plus, I had to stop every few hours to buy more gas, and that really chewed up my time even more than the bigger yards. Great mower, small tank. I must have been the only kid my age in what felt like a 10-block radius who hadn't signed up for sleepaway summer camp or who wasn't on baseball and or swim and or tennis teams that summer. I was burned out on sports after spring baseball league. All the older guys had real jobs like at the Cluckett Bucket or the Dairy Whip, and all the guys my age were mostly busy or gone, so I had a long summer full of nothing ahead of me, almost as if I'd known how things were going to work out, which, of course, I hadn't. More and more people wanted their lawns mowed. On the second day, I had 8 jobs, and the fact was that I was fast approaching my limit. 3 lawns a day, plus refilling the tank from time to time, was all I could manage, and I would have to mow the lawns every week. 3 lawns a day, once a week, 21 lawns if I worked 7 days, dawn till dark, no days off, making approximately $630 a week. Seemed like a staggering whop of money. Summer was 12 weeks long, which meant that by the end of vacation, I would have made over $7,500, way, way more than I needed to buy a new inner tube for my old 10-speed. And of course, there would be no vacation, which ran through my head as I worked. No vacation, no summer fun, no bike trips with my best friend Alan when he came to visit his father in the summer. No vacation. $7,500. No summer fun. $7,500. I had just finished the second yard of the second day, and I was already a little sick of the sight of grass, grass, grass. The only sound in the world seemed to be the sound of the mower. The vibration of the seat was the only feeling my butt had ever known. and then I met Arnold. He showed up on the sidewalk when I started the third yard of the day. Another customer, I thought. I had plenty of time to study him as I mowed toward him. Very short. I'm pretty short, and he wasn't much taller than me, and kind of round. Not fat, not heavy, just round. Everything about him was round. Rounded shoulders, hips, arms, legs, even his head was a ball. And his haircut looked like somebody had put a large bowl on his head and cut around it with scissors. Wild clothes. I saw a 70s show on television once, and everybody had shirts with impossibly long collars and colored patterns that looked like maybe somebody had taken a bucket of flowers dipped in paint and thrown it at the actors. That was Arnold's style. And he had a wide, wild tie and a kind of sport coat that looked suede but was cut with wide lapels and shoulders and a narrow waist that didn't look too good on his round body. He looked like somebody who had flunked clown school. It was hard not to smile. He waved as I approached, and I stopped and pulled the throttle back to Turtle. I liked that. Turtle or rabbit? Not written, not fast or slow, just a picture of a turtle or a rabbit. Everything should be like that. Highway signs, posted signs in the hallways of school, turtles or rabbits. It's so simple.
I hear you're the new lawn boy.
I nodded. He went on.
My name is Arnold, Arnold Howell, and I'm over there on the corner. How much would you charge for my lawn?
I looked past him. It was good-sized, but flat, and with not much detail work. Would $40 be all right?
$35 would be better.
Well, other people had been paying me $40 for a lawn that big, and that seemed fair. I guess...
The thing is, I'm having a cash flow problem, and I'll have to scramble to find even $35. I'm a stockbroker, and I work from home, and I'm a bit overextended right now.
All of which was more than I needed or wanted to know, but he seemed okay, and I thought he had an honest face, which turned out to be right, except that I'm not sure what a dishonest face would look like. Maybe a sneaky turtle or a shifty rabbit?
Tell you what, he said. How'd you like to barter? Take it out in trade.
I don't know what you mean. I didn't think he'd have anything I wanted. Not clothes, especially not clothes.
Like I said, I work out of my home. I do mostly day trading, work the small board, so to speak. I mean, it's far out, a real groovy way to work. And I make a nickel now and then, you know, moving this and that.
Was he crazy? Or one of those people with something loose in his brain? Somehow he forgot he was talking to a 12-year-old kid with an old riding mower who knew nothing about the stock market.
So, like, you're too young to have an account of your own, but I could run the $35 I owe you in on my account and make a purchase for you. It'd be in my name, but you'd get the proceeds. What do you think?
I don't know what you're talking about. You're going to buy something for me with money you owe me but don't have?
Exactly.
What are you going to buy?
Stock.
What's stock?
Shares in a company. You'd buy shares in a company.
Why?
Because then if the company does well, the shares go up in value, and you sell them to someone else and make money.
That's how the stock market works? It's that simple?
Well, yes, with a whole bunch of rules and regulations and controls, that's pretty much how it works.
And you always make money? He shook his head.
Not always. That's the beauty of it. If the stock you buy goes down, you lose money.
Oh.
You have to be aware of that and buy carefully.
Well, then the secret is to only buy stock that goes up. Arnold nodded. How hard can it be? I shrugged. I didn't have a clue what I was talking about, but it seemed pretty basic, and I had pockets full of money. I hadn't figured out where in the house to hide it where my mother couldn't find it, so I kept it jammed in my pockets. Arnold made it all seem so easy. Let's do it, I said. Chapter 4. Capital Growth Coupled with the Principles of Production Expansion. I guess you'd say that I'm a pretty normal boy, intelligence-wise. I mean, it's true that my parents are very smart people, maybe not about money, but in other ways. My dad is full of ideas on how to tackle them. He even understands Einstein. My mother can do amazingly complicated math in her head. I'm not like that. Now, I can read and learn things. I go to a regular school in Eden Prairie, and I get good grades. Maybe good is too strong a word. I get all right grades. And with my average brain and average grades, I lead a pretty average life. When I was small, I played with toys, made models. I sometimes still make models. I went through a massive video game phase and still like to play now and then. I like girls, but can't talk to them. Not a word. I try to be nice to everyone and polite to old folks, people over 20 or 30. So there's nothing to explain what happened to me that summer. It's easy to say it was all just luck, but it's hard to believe there wasn't some kind of force behind it. After meeting Arnold, I wasn't sure exactly what he was going to do, but 2 days later I mowed his lawn and he told me that he would buy me not $35 worth of some kind of stock, but $40, which was the original amount that I'd wanted for mowing his lawn.
"You're right," he said. "That's a fair price. I bought you stock in a small company that makes coffins. They're just starting up, and the stock is going for 50 cents a share."
"Coffins? You mean for dead people?"
"Right."
"But I don't want any coffins."
"You're not going to get any. You're going to get 80 shares of stock in a company called the Memorial Wooden Container Corporation."
"Well, good, because a coffin, that's more trouble than I need right now."
"Is something wrong?"
We were standing on Arnold's front steps, and he handed me some kind of hippie iced tea that tasted sweet, but he said had no sugar in it. He studied my face. "Nothing, really. It's just that I'm getting more and more jobs. I can't do them all, and I have to start turning them down."
"Supply and demand," Arnold nodded. "It's groovy, man. The very nature of the concept of economic structure. You just need more mowers, more people to meet the growing demand. The previous lawn service, before, of course, the unfortunate instance of the romantic, mishap, had a small crew of workers to handle the burden of all the lawns you're now working. You need to start distributing the wealth, dispersing the work, far out. It's beautiful."
"Well, it might be beautiful, but I can't do it. I don't know anybody."
"I might,"
he held up his hand,
"be able to help you with this."
"Help me mow lawns?" Even his smile looked round.
"No, I'm busy, but I've done some investing for a man named Pascal. He knows lots of people who are always looking for work. He's a good, reliable person. Known him for years. Can you come back after dark?"
"Well, sure, I suppose. Not real late, because my parents want me in by 9. But..." Alarm bells were ringing in my head. "Why only after dark?"
"Pascal looks after his kids during the day. When his wife comes home from her job, then he goes to work."
"He mows lawns when people are sleeping?" Arnold shook his head.
"No, he does other work that isn't so noisy. Trimming, fertilizing, that sort of thing. Quiet things won't wake the neighborhood."
"In the dark?"
"He wears a headlamp. Ingenious, really. I admire his creativity in the face of opposition. Entrepreneurship at its finest. There are no impossibilities, just hurdles to be overcome."
"Is it, you know, safe?" Kenny Halverson's uncle said he didn't like half the things he saw in the daylight and that there was a very good reason for being afraid of the dark. If we were supposed to be out in the dark, Kenny Halverson's uncle said, we'd be born with night vision goggles on our heads.
"Pascal's honest, which is really what you wanted to know. And yes, he's safe. If you don't want to meet him, that's fine. Just keep your business at its present level. But if you want to expand, I think Pascal can help you."
5 days earlier, I'd been wondering where I could find enough money for a bike inner tube, and now I was considering how I could expand my business to distribute work and disperse wealth. I shook my head at how weird things had gotten and looked back at Arnold. "Okay, let's talk to Pascal."
"Groovy, I'll call him right now. We'll meet him tonight."
And so we did. Chapter 5. Labor Acquisition and Its Effect on Capital Growth.
"Hi,"
he said.
"Arnold says you want to talk to me about work."
Pascal had the reddest hair I have ever seen in my life. My grandmother once told me,
"You can always trust a redhead. They sometimes have mean tempers, to be sure, but they've usually got good hearts."
Of course, we were at a baseball game at this time, and I'd asked her to help me figure out my favorite player's batting average, but I still thought it was pretty good advice, and so I liked Pascal right away. We were at Arnold's house. I had about 20 minutes before I had to be home. I had told my parents that I had to talk to people about new jobs, and they'd extended my be-out time to 9:30. It's nice that you found a way to make some spare change, Mom had said. But aren't you working too hard? I jammed my hands in my pockets, pockets that were crammed with, at that moment, something like $330, and said, I like the work. It's good to be out in the fresh air. My parents are big on me spending time in the fresh air for some reason. She smiled at me. I'm so glad you're having such a good summer. I was a little worried things would be too quiet for you. I decided to jump right into it with Pascal since my time was short. I have a lot of job offers I can't take because I'm working alone with only one mower. If I had help and maybe another mower, Pascal nodded.
How many jobs do you have waiting?
I thought, I could probably have 8 more. I don't really know how many might be coming along. Another nod.
I understand. Tomorrow morning, look for a small truck and a mower. A man named Lewis will be driving. He's my cousin. Tell him which lawns to cut. I'll come back when it's dark and do what silent work is needed.
How, who do I pay?
I receive half of what you get for the lawns that Lewis and I do, and I shall pay Lewis out of that half.
Half? I don't do anything and I get half? I shook my head. That doesn't seem fair. Shouldn't you get more? Pascal smiled, his mustache turning up at the corners and then down.
You take half because you are the boss. You found these jobs, and we'll find more. That's the way it's done.
But it's too much. Arnold coughed. It was the first sound he'd made since we'd started talking.
It can be adjusted later if you still feel that way. For right now, let's just come to an agreement to get the process rolling.
I shrugged. Fine with me, I guess. Pascal held out his hand, and we shook.
Lewis and the truck will be here at Arnold's house in the morning. You leave the money with Arnold, and he'll pay us.
And he was gone. Arnold and I worked out new prices since Pascal would be doing additional work. We also figured out a smaller percentage for me. I stood there for another minute thinking.
Is something wrong?
Arnold asked. I shrugged. I don't really know what to do. I've got all this money and I don't want to have it around the house where my parents could find it.
Will they steal it from you?
Oh, no, that's not it. I don't want to tell them about the money until the end of the summer.
Why wait until then?
I'm waiting for the right time, so it doesn't sound like I'm kind of bragging or something. Arnold rubbed the back of his head, then his face.
Tell you what, if you want, I'll keep it here, invest it for you, the way we did with that first stock the other day. That way your money will make money while you earn more.
I had a good feeling that Arnold was honest and smart about investing, so I gave him most of the money, keeping just enough for gas for the mower. He gave me a receipt. If I'd known what was coming, I might have fired up the mower, stuck it in Max Rabbit, and putt-putted all the way home to hide in my room. Chapter 6. Economic Expansion Combined with Portfolio Diversification. 2 weeks passed. 14 days passed. 336 hours flew by. 20,160 minutes whistled past. 12,096,000 seconds roared away. Numbers, all numbers. And that's what happened to the time. It turned into numbers. In the beginning, I had a routine. I got up early, had some cereal before my parents even woke up, grabbed a gallon jug of water from the fridge, and packed a bag lunch that I'd eat on the back of the mower while I was working. There was never any time to stop for lunch, so I got good at eating and mowing. Then left the house to start work. First, I checked the oil in the mower. Pascal showed me how to do it, and because it's an old engine, it needs a fair amount of oil. Then I added oil if I needed it, filled it with gas, and headed off down the street to Arnold's house, where I met Lewis, a thin man with a small pickup. For 2 weeks, we loaded my mower on a small trailer he pulled behind the pickup and headed to our latest jobs. And at the end of the day, we went back to Arnold's, and I would ride my mower home and fall into bed until the next morning. Lewis and I were doing 3 lawns a day each, with Pascal coming to work in the evening and early morning to do edge work and cleanup. One night, I stayed late to talk to Pascal. We can't keep up, I said. We're locked into a ginormous number of lawns now, once a week, and I'm having to turn more people down.
No, Pascal shook his head. Don't turn away work. Soon the summer will pass, the grass will be gone, and the work will fly away. We must make our lives while the summer is here. I know someone, Benny. He has a truck, and he'll come tomorrow morning. I have another cousin who can help me at night and others if you get more jobs, but you must not turn work down.
And so I went on adding lawns. I kept track of them in a little notebook. Then I bought a larger one and wrote down the names, addresses, and date mode so there was some order. Then I got jobs to do shrub trimming and pool cleanup and sidewalk edging and garage cleaning, and there were more and more people working away. One morning I arrived at Arnold's putting down the edge of the road on my grandfather's old mower, and there were 4 pickups and 12 people waiting there for me, and I thought, my, Pascal has a large family. And it was only the last week in June. But I really didn't think of much besides keeping track of the new jobs in my notebook and recutting the lawns that came due and collecting the money and handing it over to Arnold. He put aside my percentage and gave the rest to Pascal when he came to work at night. Pascal paid everyone else. Then I'd ride home to dinner with my parents, sleep, and head off to work on my mower again. Once or twice, Grandma came over for dinner.
I see you're making good use of that old mower, which reminds me, Maggie Doyle and I are going to take a pottery class through the senior center this winter.
She nodded happily and reached for the rolls. Even in my exhaustion, I noticed the glance my parents exchanged over the salad bowl.
But don't work too hard,
Grandma smiled at me.
Is that grass in your hair?
I had grass everywhere. In my socks, in my cereal bowl every morning, on my toothbrush, my shoes were stained green. I couldn't smell anything but fresh-cut grass, and I dreamed about endless lawns and enormous piles of clippings. I found myself thinking about how to best lean into turns so that the mower wouldn't leave rough patches that needed to be trimmed by hand. I spent a great deal of time wondering if I could rig an umbrella to the mower to keep the sun off my face, not because I minded the heat, but because when I squinted, I made the rows uneven. I dug through old copies of Sports Illustrated to look for pictures of Major League ballparks outfields so that I could study the patterns the grounds crews left behind in the nap of the grass. But mostly, the work cycle took over, and I kind of missed the bigger picture. Until one morning, I putted to work, and there were 5 pickups and more people, all with mowers and bags and rakes. About then, Arnold and I sat down, and he said,
"It's inefficient to have you all meet at my place every morning. Besides, the neighbors are starting to wonder why so many people congregate here."
So we decided to send everyone directly to their job sites from their homes, and I'd go around with Lewis in his truck and supervise and collect the money to bring back to Arnold, who would give Pascal his share and put mine in my account that was in his name. And it was then, that first time that Lewis and I drove around, that I began to see that what was happening was bigger than just a few people running around mowing lawns. Chapter 7. Overutilization of labor compounded by unpredicted capital growth. It was raining. This was the first day all summer it had rained hard enough to stop work. It was now July, and I'd ridden my 10-speed, yes, my old one, though I had bought a new inner tube, over to Arnold's house. Arnold had made the hippie tea that was sweet without sugar, and I sipped it while we dragged out the notebooks. I had left all the paperwork at his house because it would have been too hard to explain to my parents. There were now 5 3-ring binders, and in fact, I knew almost nothing about it myself. It had all been kind of a blur.
"It's all just too groovy," Arnold said, putting his tea down. "Free market industry and capitalism at their best. It's like watching a really good documentary about business far out."
"I don't know what we're doing," I said. "Not a clue, except that we're cutting a lot of grass and I'm not getting much sleep. And this morning my mother said she was forgetting what I look like."
"That's lucky we got a rain day."
We were in Arnold's screened-in porch, and he had spread the notebooks out on a large round picnic table.
"Gives us a little time for you to catch up and see the beauty of what you're doing."
The rain was hammering down, almost deafening, and I found myself liking it. I used to hate rain in the summer because it ruined vacation time. Now I thought rain was beautiful.
"We better start with an overall view of the lawn cutting phase of your operation."
"Oh, yes," I thought. "Let's start with that." Like I knew anything. Like I would have an operation with phases.
"Currently, you have 15 employees."
I stared at him. "That can't be right." He nodded, smiling.
Surprising, isn't it? Technically, I guess Pascal's more of a partner, and really, they're all partners in a way. They share the income from their work with you, the company head.
15? He nodded again.
Now, the truth is they earn their living because you found them work. That brings up a second consideration of this phase of your operation.
15 people work for me? I wished he would quit talking about my operation and its phases. It was starting to sound like General Motors or something.
Yes, and that should lead you to consider your responsibility as a business head. You owe your employees that consideration.
Well, sure, if there's 15 people working for me, I should consider them, but I don't know what you mean specifically.
Well, think of this. They're seasonal workers. When the cutting's done, they're no longer employed by you. A responsible employer should set aside some of his income, a percentage, to give them a bonus when the season ends to ease their transition into other forms of employment.
I should? I mean, yes, I guess I should. How does that work?
Well, first let's look at your personal gross income from lawn cutting, shall we? It's really the only figure that counts for this aspect of your operation.
Of course. Aspect, I thought. First phases, now aspects? Of my operation, I'm 12 years old, and I have aspects?
Well, for reasons we'll cover later, taxes are going to take a hefty bite, and you have some small expenses, gas for your mower, oil, that sort of thing. I kept track of those items in this expense notebook. Then there's my fee. I'm taking 5% across the board for this and the market work, just to simplify things rather than work on a sliding scale, all right?
Oh, my, yes, I thought. Let's keep it simple. I felt like I was drowning in aspects and phases. Good? I mean, I guess it is. Good? Sure. Good.
So before taxes, my percentage in expenses, you grossed out at just over 8.
8 what?
$8,000.
$8,000?
Yes. Of course, like I said, that's gross, and your net won't be anywhere near that. I think you should perhaps set aside a pretty good chunk for employee relief, perhaps 20%. At this stage, naturally, that will go up as they earn more. They'll appreciate it when the season ends.
I had this sudden memory of when I was 9 years old. Back then, I thought that someday I might be a professional basketball player. This in spite of the fact that I'm fairly short and can't make a basket to save my soul. But I thought when I was 9 that if I had just the right ball, a true professional ball made by Spalding, I could be good enough to be a professional player when I grew up. The problem was that the ball was expensive. There was no way my parents could spend that kind of money on one measly basketball, and I couldn't find a way to get enough money on my own. So I wound up with a cheap ball and, I thought, no chance at a professional basketball career. How many balls could I buy with $8,000? $8,000. I was only 3 years older now than I had been then. True, it was a big 3 years, but after just 3 years, I could afford all the Spalding basketballs I wanted. I was rich. Rich! What a strange word that was. It didn't really mean anything in itself. Rich. Short for Richard? Why does rich mean having tons of money? How many Spalding balls could I buy, really, with $8,000? Say they're $20 each to make it simple. 5 balls for $100, 50 for $1,000, 400. I could buy 400 Spalding basketballs. What do you mean? I suddenly remembered something Arnold had said. You said something about this being a small amount of money. Is that what you said? I don't know what you're used to having, but I can't think of $8,000 as a small amount.
Everything, Arnold said, is relative. Taken in the whole scheme of things, $8,000, though significant, is not all that large. If Bill Gates, who owns Microsoft, for instance, could hold all his wealth in his hands and he suddenly dropped it, just on the way to the ground, it'd make over $40,000 in interest.
Huh? I tried to picture that. Look, I understand that I don't have as much as Bill Gates. Still, I'm very satisfied with what I have. I honestly don't know what I would do with more money than that.
Seriously?
Absolutely. It's more money than I could even think of having. It wasn't that long ago I was wondering where to get enough money to buy an inner tube for my 10-speed bike. Now I could buy a whole new bike. I could buy a bunch of them.
Well then, Arnold shrugged and sighed, we have a bit of a problem.
Chapter 8. Dramatic Economic Expansion, Its Causes and Effects.
Your problem, Arnold said, is both simple and a bit complex. More tea?
No, I'm fine. Outside, the rain seemed to let up a bit, then came down harder. I could hear thunder way off somewhere. What are you talking about? He took a sip of tea.
Man, I like this tea. Comes straight from India, you know. All the yogis drink it. I hear the Beatles used to drink it all the time.
Arnold.
Well, let's go back to when all this started, all right?
You bet. Please.
You remember that I had a cash flow problem then, and instead of paying you cash, I started an account for you under my own name because you're too young to have an account?
Yes.
And we bought 80 shares of a coffin manufacturing firm for 50 cents a share?
I nodded. I'm still with you.
There's some risk, of course, with buying what they call penny stocks, which these were, but I thought with just $40 invested, even if the company went belly up, the loss rate would not be unbearable.
I'm still here.
Well, the stock did not lose. After the second quarter of the year, it turned out the company had a great deal of land in northern Minnesota, upwards of 2,000 acres of hardwoods that they planned to use to make the coffins.
Another sip of tea. I waited.
This had not been reported initially, but the land with valuable hardwoods was free and clear and belonged to the company. It was part of their net worth that nobody knew about. And when word got out, the stock rose dramatically.
How dramatically?
Normally, I dislike these things because they give a wrong impression about the stock market. 10-12% a year is a good figure to think about making in the market. These explosions are very unpredictable, and there's always an element of risk. And one shouldn't plan on
how big of an explosion.
The first day, it jumped to just over $10, and I thought of selling. Stock purchased at 50 cents and sold for $10 gives an excellent return. But the sudden surge caused a lot of interest, and people started wanting to buy the stock, and that drove the price up further and still further, and I finally sold at $100.10 a share. So your $40 investment brought you just over $8,000, less my 5% commission.
You mean I have $8,000 on top of the other $8,000? I dumped them together in my head. 8 and 8 is 16. $16,000, less commissions and those other things, taxes, less taxes, $16,000.
Well, not exactly. I assumed I had a rather free hand with your investment, so I reinvested it and some of the other money you've been giving me, and frankly, I took a daring risk with one stock. I invested my own money at the same time and took the same risk.
What did you invest it in?
It's one of those freak software things. Believe me, normally I wouldn't give it a second thought. They're just too big a gamble. But the quarterly earnings looked good. They had a new idea about nationwide internet use, something to do with vastly improving the speed. Company called Walleye. I bought you 3,000 shares at 60 cents a share.
And we lost?
Oh, my, no. The new internet system they involved swept the country and the stock jumped to $10 and split, which gave you 6,000 shares at 5, then went back up to $10 and split again, which gave you 12,000 shares, which climbed back up to $5.50 a share, hung there and flattened out, so I sold when it went back down to $4.
He had, as they say, gone past my knowledge envelope about the stock market. So you sold my 3,000 shares for $4?
No, no, he shook his head. It had split and then resplit. You had 12,000 shares at $4 a share. I must point out that this kind of growth is unprecedented.
The numbers were there. I knew they were, but they didn't register. It was just too much to understand, to believe. I was 12. That morning, my parents were having trouble deciding if they could afford a newer used car. 5 weeks earlier, my grandmother had given me her old riding lawnmower, and I'd started mowing lawns. I was only 12, and Arnold had sold 12,000 shares of Walleye for $4 a share. $48,000? Is that right?
Well, less commission, of course.
Of course, sure, right. Let me get this straight.
Sure, I know it's all kind of far out.
No, wait. You're telling me that I started with an old lawnmower And I now have... What do I have?
Well, from all of your stocks and bonds right now, over $50,000. It's less because I took out my commission, but I will, of course, reinvest it.
Of course.
All in solid, safe blue-chip stocks and government bonds.
He smiled.
Perhaps you'd better take a few deep breaths. You seem to be weaving a bit.
I have $50,000?
And change, plus the $8,000 for mowing.
And change?
You,
he said, smiling,
have had a very groovy month.
But I didn't hear him finish the sentence. I had fainted. Chapter 9. Conflict Resolution and Its Effects on Economic Policy. When I came to, there was a damp paper towel over my face.
I'm sorry,
Arnold said.
I thought I eased into it, but I guess the shock.
I thought of a really important question. I was still woozy. I'm still not sure I heard you right. Did you say I now have over $50,000?
Are you going to faint again?
No, I don't think so.
Then yes, you're now worth that.
Where is it?
In your account, under my name, but in your special account.
Can I see it?
Of course. I have your account information on the computer.
He turned to his keyboard and tapped a few keys. No, the money. Can I see the money? He shook his head.
It's not like that. First, you'd have to sell all your investments and get a check. Then you'd have to take the check to the bank and cash it. And then, yes, you could see the money. And when you sell, you then owe taxes on your capital gains. At the end of the year, capital gains is what they call the profits you made from your initial investment.
Oh, I didn't quite follow all that, I thought. So I don't really have the money, I said slowly. I have a computer screen and numbers and stocks and things, but not the actual money.
That's right. That's how it works. You, or I acting for you, will reinvest the money in safe stocks, which will give you what's called a diversified portfolio. So if one thing goes down, another might go up to cover you. But it's all there, and you can cash it in any time you want, except...
Except what? I smelled a rat.
Right now, the money appears to be mine because legally you can't invest in the market because you're too young. You have to go through an adult. And I'm a little uncomfortable with this because, first of all, I'm not your legal guardian. And second, since the money appears to be mine, the government will want me to pay taxes on it. And that shouldn't be my responsibility to pay taxes on your money.
So what do we do?
Well, soon, very soon, we talk to your parents and get them involved.
Mom, I thought. Dad, I have something to tell you. I've been mowing lawns. I've been mowing a lot of lawns, and I have 50,000. Please pass the green beans. And by the way, I have 50,000. Breakfast over toast. Mom, Dad, you know how I've been mowing lawns every day? Well, guess what? We have something like 50,000 and change.
There's something else.
What on earth could it be? How could anything in the world top this? What is it?
As I said, I put your money into this walleye stock, but I should remind you, not all your money. I thought it might be good to do some investing for fun.
It isn't fun, I thought, to have over $50,000.
So there was this kind of fun for people interested in sports, and I thought you might like to invest in that.
He trailed off, and I studied him. Is something wrong? He shook his head. Looked out at the rain. I couldn't believe it was still raining, that it was the same day, that we had only been talking for an hour or so. Part of me was listening, and part of me was imagining what the money would do to help my parents, what it would buy.
I misread the explanation on the fund, he said and sighed. Usually in this kind of fund, a lot of investors pool their money and perhaps buy a baseball team or help to build a stadium, but it didn't turn out that way.
How exactly did it turn out?
It turns out that you own 100% interest in a heavyweight boxer who lives nearby.
I own him?
Not really the person, of course. You're sponsoring him. And if he does well, you split the purse.
He has a purse? What kind of prize fighter carries a purse?
That's a figure of speech. The purse is the prize money, his winnings.
What's his name?
Joseph,
Arnold said.
Joseph Powdermilk Jr. I have the specs in the computer and can run you a printout if you like.
Sure, I'd like to know more about him.
Good, because he's due here in about 15 minutes. He called last night and wants to meet a sponsor and thank him.
Arnold shook his head.
Look, I'm really sorry about this. If you lose, I'll cover it, all right? And as for meeting him, well, he asked about a sponsor, and without thinking, I gave him this address. So if you want, you can leave right now and miss it.
I shook my head. No, and if we lose on this, it's not your fault. 5-6 weeks ago, I was sitting in my yard wondering about an inner tube. Now I'm a thousandaire or something. You think I'm going to complain?
Some would,
he sighed.
Some have. What if we'd lost?
Then we would have lost $40. That's what we started with, right? We lose the whole walleye thing, and all we've really lost is that, the original $40.
Well, that's a healthy way to look at it.
There was a sudden clatter in front of the house, and an old station wagon rumbled to a stop. It sat almost wheezing. Then the driver's side door opened, and with a great deal of difficulty, a man got out. I say man, but this person looked more like a living mountain than a man.
I see it,
Arnold said,
but I don't believe it. How did he get in the car?
He was wearing a big sweatshirt and sweatpants, and as he moved up the sidewalk to the door, his step was amazingly light for someone his size, almost like a really big cat. Even though he could see us through the screen of the porch, he knocked on the screen door.
Please,
Arnold said,
come in.
A quick motion, a side slip, and he was in the door and standing in front of Arnold.
I'm Joseph Powdermilk, and I'd like to thank you for being my sponsor.
He faced Arnold and held out his hand. I've never heard such a voice. It sounded like thunder a long way off, muted but deep, rumbling.
Sorry,
Arnold said.
Wrong sponsor.
He pointed to me.
This is him.
He turned, a mountain turning.
I'm Joseph Powdermilk, and I would like to thank you for being my sponsor.
He held out a hand as big as a whole ham. I put my hand out. It disappeared completely in his, and we shook. His touch was gentle. It's nice to meet you, I said. My name is... Just then, Pascal's truck streaked up behind Joseph Powdermilk's station wagon and came to a screeching halt. Pascal came running up to the porch. I knew it must be serious because it was daylight. Pascal never came out in daylight.
Come right away!
I got up. What's the matter?
His name is Rock. He has two guys with him. He says we've got to pay him or he'll harm our workers. He plans to take over the business.
What can I do?
Come. If Rock doesn't meet the boss, he'll cause a lot of trouble. Come now.
I hadn't taken a step before I saw Joseph Powdermilk move with me.
Oh, help, he rumbled. I'm good at this.
I was out the door. Good at what?
Trouble.
Chapter 10. Force of Arms and Its Application to Business. Pascal, Joseph, and I jammed into Pascal's truck. Arnold had said he would follow in his car, but Joseph said,
You don't need to come. I'm sure it will be all right.
I sat in the middle of the front seat, and Joseph sat on the right. Pascal hadn't seen Joseph before, but seemed to accept that he would be coming with us. He looked at Joseph once. Briefly, when Joseph squeezed into the cab of the truck, and the whole truck leaned so I thought it would tip over. But then we were on our way. The house where Pascal's relatives lived was more or less a big box with a good yard because they worked on it when they had time off. There were four trucks parked in front under the huge elm trees that stood along the street. The first three trucks I recognized. The fourth one was a red pickup angled into the curb, not parked parallel like the others. A man was sitting behind the wheel with the driver's side window open, and two men were leaning against the end of the truck. One of them was pretending to clean his fingernails with a knife. Several of Pascal's family members were standing around by the door of the house. They seemed a little afraid, maybe, but mostly confused.
The one in the truck is Rock,
Pascal said, stopping. Joseph opened the door and slid out. The truck rose visibly when his weight was gone. He shrugged as if to loosen his shoulders, strode up to the driver's side of the red truck, reached in and grabbed Rock by the neck and pulled him out through the window. Then, holding Rock by the neck and crotch, Joseph power drove him through the window into the truck head first. This happened fast. The man with the knife was still cleaning his fingernails when Joseph moved around the front of the truck, grabbed the arm with the knife, and shook the guy like a dog shaking a snake. The knife flew through the air, and Joseph picked this man up by the neck and the crotch and threw him into the third man, knocking him sprawling. Then Joseph picked them up one at a time and speared one into the passenger side through the window and the other into the back of the truck. He went back to the driver's side and stood over Rock, who had tried to scramble around but still had one leg hanging out the window.
"Don't hurt the boy who's my sponsor," Joseph rumbled, "or any of these people who work with him. If you do, I'll know and I'll come and pinch your head. Do you understand?"
"You're crazy," Rock said.
"All that matters is that you do not hurt my sponsor or any of the people who work with him, and you do not ask them for money. If you do, I'll know and I'll come and pinch your head. Do you understand?"
"Yeah, yeah, but this isn't over."
"That doesn't matter. Only what I said matters. Start your engine and drive away."
Rock scrabbled to get the key turned in the ignition, slapped the shift lever down, and tore away with one leg still sticking out the window and the other two men with their legs hanging out the passenger side in the back of the truck. Pascal's relations started a slow applause and soft whistles as Joseph came back to our truck. It had happened so fast that Pascal and I hadn't had time to get out. Joseph moved his bulk back onto the seat, and the springs creaked as he sat down. "Maybe," I said slowly, "we should have talked to them first. You know, before you... Well, just maybe we should have talked."
"We did talk," Joseph said. "Before we came, they talked and asked for money. Then after I put them in the truck, I talked. Then they drove away. That's the best way. First talk, then handle the problem, then watch them go away."
"I'll remember that," I said. Joseph nodded.
"Some things are hard to remember, but this one is easy."
I nodded. "Still, maybe next time, if there is a next time, we could talk a little longer first?"
"Maybe,"
he sighed.
"Maybe not. Each time is different."
Pascal drove off, but I saw that he was looking at Joseph out of the corner of his eye, and he said something under his breath.
"What?"
I asked.
"He's a force of nature."
It was something.
"A big storm sweeping down to clean all things away."
I think it was more like an earthquake. I trailed off thinking.
"Joseph, do you have a boxing name, like a catchy title?"
"My name is Joseph Powdermilk, so I use that when I box."
"I think we need something with a little more excitement to it. How about if we call you Earthquake?"
"Earthquake?"
"Right. We'll call you Earthquake Powdermilk the next time you box. How does that sound?"
"It sounds like it's not my name."
"Oh, well, okay, sure."
"Wait."
I jumped back from the percussion of his bellow.
"Joey Pow,"
he said.
"Pardon me?"
"Joey Pow,"
he said.
"It's catchy, and it's my name."
"Joey Pow."
I looked over at Pascal, who was smiling at Joey. "I like it." And just like that, I was the sponsor of a boxer, I had security for the business, and my fighter had a cool nickname. I love it when things work out like that. Chapter 11. Business and the Art of Creative Misrepresentation. It was still raining softly that afternoon as I pedaled home from Arnold's, but the sun was coming out, and I knew we'd be able to work the next day. I told Arnold what happened with Rock. He nodded.
"As you become more successful, you'll attract more attention, good and bad. It's a fact of business. It was good that Mr. Powdermilk showed up. With our unique situation, it might be difficult to call the authorities."
"Are we breaking the law?"
"Not at all, not at all. But it might be difficult to explain how all this could happen without your parents knowing."
I watched as Joey Pow waved, got in his station wagon, and drove away. "I'm going to tell them. I'm just waiting for the right time."
"Soon. The right time should be soon."
I nodded. "Maybe tonight." "And just for the record, I tried." Mom came home around 4 o'clock from her summer job. Dad came out of his lab in the basement. I helped in the kitchen, and we had a proper sit-down meal. After the meal, Dad read the paper, and I helped Mom with the dishes, and then we went into the living room to watch television. Just after Dad put the paper down and Mom turned the set on, there was a moment. "Mom? Dad?" They both looked at me. "I've been mowing lawns." Seemed lame. "Try again." "I mean, I know how hard you work." Still lame. Hmm. All right, shoot the moon. Mom, Dad, if you could have anything you wanted, anything, what would it be? Mom looked at me. Is this a game?